You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Okay, so I haven't got to see The Godfathers yet. I'm sorry.
Yep, that's it. You're drifting out of the 12th spot every time now.
That is horseshit, and you know it.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Second of all, Ben, it's called Guaranteed Rate Field. They don't call it the cell anymore. And if you're going to call it the cell, you may as well call it Comiskey.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brentz, joined by Ray Kuhn and Evan Peterson for the Kuhn and Friends Podcast. How are you guys doing tonight, Evan?
I'm doing fantastic. I love that you've embraced this this naming phenomenon that I've bestowed upon us. I'm good. It's good to have the first podcast with all of the boys here.
I'm good. Although
we're back in town.
Although we did learn some disturbing news tonight that maybe we should bring our listeners up to speed on. The fact that young Ben here has never seen The Godfather.
You watch it. You don't.
I mean, we're just telling facts. We do, and we did. And they're all on Netflix, Ben. I think we have homework for you.
Okay, so I haven't got to see The Godfathers yet. I'm sorry.
Yep, that's it. You're drafting out of the 12th spot every time now.
That is some horseshit, and you know it.
That's all right. We'll be here to carry the man card for the podcast and to make up for all of Ben's thoughts. Stick around. Hot catcher talk coming your way.
Yeah, so today we're going to be covering catchers, and we're going to go on a tier-by-tier basis. So, and we're going to also provide some ADP and as of what they are right now on Fantrax. So we're looking to kind of dig in and give a little insight towards the catcher position, which – you know, some catcher leagues, there's two, some are one, you know, some want nothing to do with the catcher position at all. But before we jump in, Evan, why don't you give our listeners your Twitter handle?
You can find me at EvFWFB on Twitter.
What about you, Ray?
I am at Ray_Kuhn_28 on Twitter.
And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Why don't we jump right in? And I'm pretty sure a lot of people in the industry are going to have Gary Sanchez in a tier by himself. So, Evan, what is your basis for actually going and drafting someone like Gary Sanchez as opposed to anyone else who's in the similar ADP range as him?
I mean, he's kind of like the Rob Gronkowski of fantasy baseball, right? He gives you the biggest advantage at, you know, at the shallowest position. And if you look at even just the player raters from 2016 to 2017, and you look at how compressed everything got at the top last year, and it was more spread out in 2016, he just provides such a consistent advantage in, you know, four of the five offensive categories. Steals are, you know, kind of are what they are for catchers. You're not really expecting too much out of your catcher in the speed department usually. But Sanchez is, you know, if I had to put money on who would lead catchers in home runs, I would bet on Gary. I think he's really the only guy that you could say has, you know, crazy, you know, 35 home run upside potential. And that's a big thing for a position that, you know, a lot of people are just going to be hoping for 20 home runs out of their catcher. And a few years ago, it seemed like you might be able to find that a little more easy. But I love Sanchez. And we were talking about him being a top 30 player. Do you think he'll be that high for you?
Ray, you want to take this?
I mean, for me personally, I have to rank him that high, but I'm not going to draft him that high. I mean, it's just, I guess, a way of building my team. It's a philosophy. In one catcher leagues, yeah. I mean, really, in any catcher league, he's going to give you an advantage. Because most likely he's going to, as Evan said, he's going to lead the position to home runs. Batting average is going to be actually a little bit of an asset, which, again, we're not necessarily used to seeing from catchers. The fact that he plays in the American League, the Yankees showed last year that they're willing to use the DH spot to give him a rest. Now that they have Stanton and Judge to shuttle in with all their outfielders, it'll be interesting to see that how that happens this year. But, I mean, if we go to a one-catcher league, all right, yeah, Sanchez, say he hits 30 to 35 homers. You're going to be able to find a few other catchers that get to 25, 30, and then more guys around the 20 range. So, I mean, I guess it depends more on a value-based drafting of do you want to get that ace in the second round? Where you're going to have to take Sanchez if you want him? Or do you want to get 10 to 15 home run advantage over everyone else in your league at the catcher position, or do you think you can make that up somewhere else? To me, I'd rather try to make that up somewhere else and not waste a second-round pick on someone that plays. I mean, obviously, anyone can get hurt, but catchers generally are the most prone to getting injured, so I'm going to stay away from Sanchez.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that he's going to go high in drafts, and this is a position that I've been pretty consistent on over the years that I try to not really go and grab anyone unless I feel that I've taken care of some of my other main positions first and that there's a catcher who I like that's either fallen a little bit or in a good value position that I like. Someone like Gary Sanchez, yeah, I love the fact that he's going to hit you 25-plus home runs as long as he stays healthy and he could, you know, get you 90 RBIs. Depending on where he's hitting in the order, obviously with the addition of Stanton, and if Bird comes back, they could drop him down to order. They could put him higher. It just depends where they put him. But he's obviously going to be able to get on base and provide you good solid stats, but I'd rather either get a good solid outfield or a good starting pitcher or, you know, maybe even another hitter in the infield over someone like Gary Sanchez there because I feel that you can still get decent value later. And in an OBP league, you can even grab someone like a Buster Posey or a potentially a Wilson Contreras or someone of that will provide you similar on-base percentage skills and may have only a slight dip in county stats.
Yeah, you brought up this whole Buster Posey OBP thing, and I think that's the biggest thing and kind of something that I'm really looking at in evaluating players this year is, you know, how much, you know, each home run is worth as far as tilting towards your batting average. I don't think Buster Posey is going to provide so much more just because he's got higher ratios. Like Sanchez still provides tons of run and RBI, and I just don't understand why it narrows the gap so much personally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to me, we're talking, I mean, it narrows the gap. I mean, obviously Sanchez is a better player. I don't think anyone's going to argue that, but if you get Posey 40 to 50 picks later, I think that also makes a difference, something you have to consider.
Yeah, there's a lot of different factors. I mean, if you're a person who actually cares about what the player writer says, I mean, obviously in baseball, it's still skewed in all things in ESPN. You know, it will be skewed towards steals and other things in the position. But for someone like Posey who may hit 50 points higher in an OBP, or have a 50 points better in on base percentage and may have a couple more steals, and will probably improve in the runs and RBIs department this year, only for the fact that the offense around him has improved, there could be an easier gap to closing that value that you may be able to get, you know, like Gray said, 40, 50 spots later in draft. So for someone like that, it could be worth it that you may not have a significant drop-off in value, and you can still get a great catcher just later in the draft.
Well, I mean, the other, one other note on Sanchez is last year he had a 25% home run to fly ball rate. I mean, obviously we know that his power, based on all the metrics, the power is real, the power is legit. But how much do we really want to bank on that 25% home run rate repeating? I mean, there's nothing to say that it can't, but it's on the higher side, and maybe it does go down a tick or two. And then you're looking at a 30 home run guy instead of a 35 home run guy.
Yeah. Why don't we move into the next tier, where I have Buster Posey, Wilson Contreras, and JT Realmuto. Ray has Buster Posey and Wilson Contreras, and Evan has Posey, Contreras, Realmuto, and Perez. So, Evan, what makes you think that Perez is in the same tier as these guys, and where do you expect the value to be at the end of the year for someone like a Perez?
Well, I don't know if you guys factor in a little bit of a slant towards OBP leagues. I know a lot more people play in OBP leagues nowadays, and that's not really Perez's game. But as far as being a, you know, power source at the position, he's had over 20 home runs the past 3 years, and that's where you start to see breaks. Like if you look at play rated data as far as maximizing value over other players, 20 home runs is kind of where you want to be. He hit 27 last year. I don't know that that's necessarily a repeat. I'd be interested to see what you guys think the 23 number Steamer has pegged on him for an over-under, but I just think that as far as the other statistics, the run and RBI are kind of going to shake out to what, you know, any other catcher that you're going to draft in this range is going to be. So if he's going to provide you a boost in power, and like I said, if he hits, you know, 265, he's not a huge detriment to your batting average. He kind of deserves to be up here because of the power output.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't walk, which obviously you touched on. The power is there. He boosted his fly balls last year. So on the 23 homers, I take the over. I mean, not by much, maybe by like two or three, if that, but just based on the fly ball boost. He makes solid contact. The batting order is going to be an issue for Perez. As of now, there's not much protection for him. He's shown the ability, for the most part, to stay healthy and get to 500 at bat. So, I mean, I think he could do that even with the DL stint. So, I mean, yeah, I'm comfortable with Perez.
Yeah, for Perez, I believe I've touched on this when Ray and I did the Royals podcast. I'm not low on Perez. I'm just not someone who gets overly excited by someone like Perez. The reason that is because he doesn't have, at this current time, really anyone in the lineup that's really valuable other than him and Whit Merrifield. So I'm not sure how big those counting stats could be. They just traded Brandon Moss away, which was someone who was going to get every day at bats and could provide some power. So you don't really get anything at first base as of right now of any value that I see. If they don't bring anyone in, I'm going to get worried that he's going to have, you know, a lot of at bats and maybe not a ton of counting stats as a result. And that kind of makes me want to put him in another tier. The fact that he gets a ton of RBIs, obviously, is something that makes me want to draft him, but I can't put him in the same tier as Posey, Contreras, and Realmuto, because I think those guys can be quote-unquote fantasy stars at the catcher position, and I don't think Sal Perez is that.
Well, the thing for me, you mentioned Realmuto. I have them in the same, Perez and Realmuto, in the same tier, because to me right now, they're kind of in the same situation. Neither, I mean, unless obviously Realmuto gets traded and he gets traded to Washington, then I'm probably going to end up bumping up to him up to the Contreras Posey tier for me, to the second tier. But right now, Realmuto has really, he has Justin Bour and guys whose mothers really barely know who they are in the Marlins batting order. I mean, and Realmuto loses to Perez in the home run department. RBI, maybe it's a push, but I still take Perez on the RBIs. Realmuto is going to contribute 10 steals or so, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why you may not want someone like a Real Muto, but I still feel that he can still have some decent pop in his bat. I still think that 15 home runs is accessible. Out of 65 RBIs, I'm not sure how much that's going to go down. You know, maybe it goes down to 60 or 55, but I'm not sure if it really drops below 50 because he's still a pretty good hitter. For someone like Sal Perez, he was at 27 home runs and 80 RBIs last year. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if all the catching over the last bunch of years has caught up to him and maybe he doesn't hit 27 if he hit 20. And without that lineup around him, he could easily drop down to 60, 65 RBIs. That takes a huge ding to his value. And he already doesn't walk a lot. So if you're in an OBP league, you know, obviously you're going to get a bit of a hit there. So that's the reason for me having differentiated them in different tiers.
I was pulling something up here. I was going to say he could also kind of be a DH for them, which is he does like catch every game. He never really, you know, goes and plays first or anything like that. Roster Resource has Jorge Soler as their DH right now. A whole lot of nothing going on their bench as well. Ryan Goins, Billy Burns, Drew Butera. Yuck. So there's outlets for, you know, Perez to possibly stay healthy if the Royals are going to be as terrible as, you know, they might be.
And that's the thing. For all we know, they could bring back someone like Moustakas and someone like a Hosmer, and it would make me feel that, sure, I could bump him up into that second tier potentially just because he could be able to replicate stats like he did last year. If he's able to put up those stats, I think that he's a clear choice to be in the discussion to be in that second tier because of the counting stats that he's able to give you. But as of how the lineup's constructed right now, it makes it tough for me to put him there.
Yeah, definitely.
Evan, did you have anything else to add on this tier?
No, I mean, we didn't say anything about Wilson Contreras, but I do think he's a really interesting player this year, and I really like him. So,
and for me, Contreras, the big thing is he has some pop, but he has to increase the fly ball rate. 29% fly ball rate, I think it was around 29% last year, and he was over 50% on the ground ball. So if he kind of trades some ground balls for fly balls, then I think he really might start to elevate and get closer to Gary Sanchez. Because it's really just the home runs. And, I mean, the RBIs, I think, will come with playing time for Contreras, and there's not really much of an obstacle for playing time behind the plate for him for Chicago.
Yeah. The only thing you'd have to worry about is if the fly ball rate went up and they weren't leaving the park at that, you know, rate that you want it to, is what point does his batting average start to kind of tumble a little bit?
Yeah, so that's true. But, I mean, you hope with the power that he can get some loft and get it in the wind. And
he's an athletic guy. He's got, you know, big boy strength. He can do it.
It would also be nice to see him be able to get an uptick on his at-bats. Last year, he, out of all the catchers, he had the 12th most at-bats by catchers. So it would be nice if we could see him get over that 400 mark, you know, even get to the 425, 430 area. And you could see a big difference if he was able to get those 60 at-bats because he could still put on another, you know, 5 home runs maybe. He could put on an extra 5 to 10 RBIs with relative ease, I believe. And he still has a good chance to have a good average. So I think if he's able to do that, he could easily move into the second or third best catcher. It just depends on how many at-bats he gets.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that. And maybe at that point, based on the OBP over Sanchez, the Sanchez will have a little more company in that top tier, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree. Why don't we move into tier 3, who I obviously have Sal Perez, I also have Yadier Molina, and Evan Gattis. Ray has, in his tier 3, Real Muto, Sal Perez, Evan Gattis, and Mike Zunino. And Evan has in his tier three, Evan Gattis. Is there a reason you only have one player in this tier, Evan, or are you not sold on him being good enough to jump into that second tier, or what makes you put him by himself?
Why would you not love the man-beast known as Evan Gattis? I just think that if he does have the everyday DH role in Houston, and if he is on the field for the entire season, that, you know, we kind of talk about the power level that you want to be at. I think he's got, you know, 20 home run floor if he plays, you know, a full season, with definitely the ability to hit, you know, 30 home runs. He's hit 30 before. It's not really a stretch. And I think, you know, comparing him to a guy like Zunino, like comparing the power, I just like what Gattis is going to do in the batting average department a little more. And I just kind of wanted to use the tier as a separator between, you know, players of that ilk. So that's why I have Gattis in a tier all by himself.
And what about you, Ray? What about your tier puts Gattis in the same tier for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, kind of like what Evan said, like, tier three is my line of demarcation, kind of. Really, up to this point, Zunino, who's the last player in the tier for me, is the only catcher that's going to hurt you in batting average. And then really, once you get past this tier, they're either going to hurt you in batting average, they're going to maybe just be league average at best in home runs. There's something with the catchers, and based on the price point, really, Gattis and Zunino probably going to be the first two catchers that I target when I'm building my team, unless one of the other guys drops a little bit. And as far as Gattis goes, I mean, yeah, the guy has power. He's shown the power in the past. He's come close to 30 home runs a few times. Last year, he had the shoulder issue early in the season. Obviously, the home runs are down, but he used that to increase his contact rate. So now if he can get the contact rate to stay, plus with the home runs, and he's playing every day, and he's in a deep lineup, we could be looking at 20 to 25 homers, maybe 80 RBIs, 85 RBIs. With a decent average, it's not really going to hurt you.
Yeah, for me, I really like Zunino, what he could bring to the table. Obviously, the average and the contact skills are something that makes me a little bit worried, which is why I have him in my next tier as opposed to this tier. But Gattis is someone that I've increased my stock on as of late, and that's just because the consistency that he's still able to bring when not getting full-time at-bats is clearly there. So the fact that there's a good chance that he could have full-time at-bats now that, you know, someone like a Beltran is gone and they don't have as many players that they're trying to get into the lineup as consistently as they were trying to last year, and obviously he did have some of those injuries last year, it would be useful if he was able to get those at-bats and show that consistency, and I feel that he's able to do it, which is why I bumped him up to this tier.
I mean, for Zunino, the key for me is that his power is really, Sanchez is really the only one that comes close with power for catchers. So, I mean, there's real potential there. He keeps the ball off the ground. So, I mean, he's really all an all or nothing type of guy, but a few more bloops, 240 turns into 250, whatever. It's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. And based on his ADP, which right now on Fantrax is 207, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Sorry, I fell in a splits tool hole on Evan Gattis. Mike Zunino, as far as the batting average, we were kind of discussing this pre-show, so I know everybody loves hearing about those kinds of things. I was looking at, like, if you just took five hits off of Mike Zunino, like what it would do to affect his batting average, and it would have dropped him from a 251 to a 238. And I think that the conversation on Zunino is a lot different this year if he hits 230, like if his stat line at the end of last year is 238. And I just kind of wonder how fast his batting average can really deteriorate and how much it can become a liability. I mean, you were talking about how valuable Posey becomes in an OBP league because of his ratios, even though he's not outputting the same power as, you know, like a Gary Sanchez. At what point, even though if Zunino's hitting you 25 to 30 home runs, is his 220 batting average just going to absolutely, you know, hurt your team?
Yeah, it definitely could. There's I mean, there's a downside to it, and I think it's priced into Zunino's value. But again, it comes down to if you're gonna how you start your team off too. If you start your team off with more average, moderate power guys, and you have to make up some power later on in the draft, Zunino comes into play. If that's not necessarily an issue, but I mean, again, batting average for catchers really isn't that great to begin with. So I mean, Zunino's hitting 240. I mean, with the exception of the top tier guys, mostly everyone else, you're lucky if you get 260 from them.
I mean, a lot of it is platoon stuff that you can kind of curate a little, like Yasmani Grandal or something like that. You can kind of pick and choose your spots there and make that average a little better.
But, I mean, even Chirinos, like, there's some buzz. I mean, I think I have him as, like, my 14th-ranked catcher. There's some buzz on Chirinos for this year, especially if they end up not re-signing Luke Roy and they don't get anybody else. But, is Chirinos going to hit more than 15 to 20 homers? And, I mean, we're talking about the same thing, that maybe he hits 240 or 250. I'd rather take the 10 extra homers and take my chances on the batting average with Zunino.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be a good lineup around him too, so the opportunities for counting statistics should be there.
What are your guys' thoughts on Yadier or Molina, who all three of us have him in a different tier? We'll start with you, Ray.
I think we are... Whether or not you think that Molina is going to end up in the Hall of Fame at the end of his career, at this point, it doesn't matter because, number one, he's 35 and we're talking about 2018. And we're talking about fantasy, and a large part of Molina's value and why he's such a great catcher is because of his defense. And we're not getting any points for that unless you own a Cardinals catcher, but that's a different story for a different day. So as far as Molina, he's obviously getting older. I think the Cardinals are starting to work Carson Kelly in a bit more. So that speaks to the playing time from Molina going downhill. He's not really running anymore, and I wouldn't expect him to run anymore because they want to keep him healthy and his speed is on the way down. So you're no longer getting the stolen bases. His contact is at an elite level. Contact rate's at an elite level. The power, he has some, but it's not really much, not really standing out. So you're losing out on home runs. Batting average is there. The RBIs are decent. I mean, to me, he's a dependable catcher that as long as he's healthy, he's going to catch 4 or 5 games a week, and you can plug him in. But he's not doing anything special for me in my lineup.
And you, Evan?
Yeah, I think he's just kind of a compiler. I think the Cardinals are going to run him out there as much as possible. And I think that he's a guy that's not going to tank your batting average, but he doesn't provide excellent pop. I wouldn't expect anything remotely close to the 18 home runs he hit last year or remotely close to the 9 steals that he had last year. And I mean, like I said, compiler.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect him to be able to put up the same stats as last year, but the fact that he could easily get, you know, another 450 to 500 at-bats because of how often he plays, and the fact that he is a smart base runner, and if he wanted to be able to steal 9, he has the capability, but I still peg him to hit the 4 or 5 area this year, maybe 3, but between 3 and 5 would be a safe number for me to expect from him because he seems to always put up a few stolen bases a year. I expect the power to probably drop down to, you know, 13, 14 home runs because last year was more of an outlier for his recent years, and same with the RBIs. But at the same point in time, the lineup is still decent around. There's still people who are on base around him. And you know, with the addition of Ozuna and a full year of Dexter Fowler with no injuries and Tony Pham being up, there's a potential that you could have decent county stats once again, depending on where he's hitting in the lineup. So that's my reason for having him higher, is just because of the consistency that I feel he's able to bring to the table in the catcher position. Why don't we move into the next tier? I personally have Wellington Castillo, Wilson Ramos, Jonathan Lucroy, Mike Zunino, and Brian McCann in my fourth tier. Ray has Yadier Molina, Wellington Castillo, Wilson Ramos, Brian McCann, Austin Barnes, and Travis d'Arnaud in his fourth tier. And Evan has Wellington Castillo, Wilson Ramos, Mike Zunino, Brian McCann in his fourth tier. So, Ray, why don't we start with you? What brings a player like Austin Barnes or Travis d'Arnaud into your fourth tier of catchers?
All right, for me, Barnes is, I'm going to go with the understanding that he's going to get the majority of playing time for the Dodgers behind the plate. He's also versatile. He's eligible at second base. I mean, obviously, I'd rather use him at catcher than second base, but it could get him in the lineup maybe a little bit more if they want to get his contact skills in there over Grandel's power. But strikeout potential, Barnes is going to give you a good average. He's going to pick up some RBIs and some runs based on how much he plays. So it's kind of playing time dependent. And he's going to steal some bases, which could be an asset at the catcher position if you have to try to make up steals. So you're going to get batting average. You're going to get some stolen bases. He's just not going to hurt you. So I'm okay with that. If I'm not really paying too much of a price for it, I'm okay with the catcher that's not going to do much, but also maybe help me a little bit in two categories and not hurt me anywhere else. And as far as d'Arnaud, I mean, it's interesting to go back a number of years now when the Mets traded Ari Dickey to Toronto. D'Arnaud was the signature piece in that return, and he was the one that got the hype, at least initially, not Noah Syndergaard. And we obviously know how that's turned out. Key for d'Arnaud is that the guy just cannot stay healthy. But maybe it would be nice if he could make it through one season and actually not get injured and stay on the field. He has decent pop. For whatever reason, he's never been able to hit for that good of an average, but he makes contact at an average to above average rate. So I'm kind of just hoping that maybe he's going to stay healthy. Maybe the power is going to grow a little bit more. Maybe he'll get the batting average up a little bit, that he's one of the few catchers that maybe there's a little room for growth, positive value, and potential.
For someone like a Travis d'Arnaud, he actually started off pretty good a couple years ago when he was batting second in the lineup for the Mets until he got hit on the wrist with the pitch and was out for like 2 months. And then ever since then, his ability to actually hit for average has been pretty crappy. As a Mets fan, last year was, I feel like, the best year from Travis d'Arnaud, and it was pretty average compared to what I'm used to from the catcher position in general. So for her, someone like him to actually stay healthy is pretty much a stretch at this point. I think you and I would both agree on that, right? Considering that we both actually watch the Mets. But for me, I don't know if I'm actually going to be able to see as much power from him this upcoming year, because 16 home runs for him just seems like kind of a long shot. I know he did it last year, but it just seems like an unlikely thing for him to repeat. What are your thoughts, Evan, on Travis d'Arnaud?
I mean, you guys kind of touched on everything that I would have touched on as far as his health concerns. The one thing I was taking a look at while you guys were talking was his swing and miss percentage, especially on pitches outside of the zone. And he was swinging at a ton of pitches last year, well above, you know, what we'd seen him do in his career. I think that if he makes contact with it and, you know, gets it in the air, there's a possibility for him to hit somewhere in the 17 to 20 home runs as far as like extreme upside. But there's just so many roadblocks in his way that I wouldn't even put the number much higher than probably 13 or 14 for him.
And what about someone like Austin Hedges? Are you a fan of him?
Of Hedges? Yeah, I like Hedges. I was doing a little bit of research on him, and they were. I was reading an article talking about the change in his swing, the leg kick that he introduced that kind of helped him plant and drive a little bit better. I think there is a little bit of room for growth as far as Hedges. Not, you know, ton of, like, you know, 25 home run upside or anything like that. But as far as, you know, the batting average coming up from the 214 that he showed last year, I think that could definitely go up. He was always kind of been a defensive first catcher. And, you know, maybe it just being around, he can start to pick up some things in the batter's box.
Yeah, for me, I'm not as high on someone like an Austin Hedges, only for the fact that I'm not exactly sure what he's going to be able to bring to the table in terms of average. Like, is he really going to improve on that average significantly? Because he hit 214 last year. It would be nice if he could hit around 250, 260. I think if he's able to do that, you know, could see those home runs go up from 18 to maybe 25. Just because he'll be making more contact, he may have more confidence and everything. Also see those counting stats go up. The question is he going to be able to get more at-bats, and is he going to be able to make more contact? Until those questions are answered, I feel like I'm staying away from him. So, just because there's so many other catchers with question marks that I'm higher on than him, that I don't need to tank that average as much. I could get more power, you know, from someone like a Mike Zunino that I am higher on than someone like an Austin Hedges.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Hedges obviously has the power, but, and I think the playing time will be there for him in San Diego, but it's really just the batting average and how much it's going to hold him back and how much power he's really going to get. And, I mean, I'm not sure that necessarily stands out from the pack of a Wellington Castillo or a Brian McCann or a Wilson Ramos or a Robinson Chirinos. I think it's kind of, right now it's in that group, and they're going to give you a little better batting average.
What about someone like Wellington Castillo? What are your guys' thoughts on him? Because we all have him around the same spot. We know that he's got power. He's going to a lineup where he could actually hit for some power, especially in cellular field. So what are your thoughts on him, Ray?
It's kind of an average catcher to me. I mean, when I'm looking at my baseline catcher, it's kind of Wellington Castillo. Not going to help, not going to hurt. He's kind of, you know, he's right where I want someone to be for the position. He's not going to cost me too much. His ADP is at 218 right now. And that's the 10th catcher off the board per Fantrax. So it's not too much of an investment. You know, he's kind of just there. He's kind of league average. You know what you're going to get. I'm okay with that.
And what about you, Evan?
Yeah, he's, like I said, you want to get to 20 home runs. You want a, you know, the batting average is going to be the biggest thing. And there's going to be people that I don't think he's going to hit 280 again this year. I think he's going to be closer to the 264 that he hit last year. Second of all, Ben, it's called guaranteed rate field. They don't call it the cell anymore. And if you're going to call it the cell, you may as well call it Comiskey, because that's what everybody wants to call it anyways. But yeah, there's actually way more sinister names that they call guaranteed rate field, but I won't go into those. But I do like Castillo this year, and I think that he is going to be a good producer for teams.
For me, I'm kind of stuck because I could see him hitting 20 home runs again, the average like, obviously dropping like you guys, but are the county stats really going to improve depending on the lineup that he's in? Is he really going to take more walks, or is he going to take around the same amount of walks? So for me, he's kind of an average guy, which is why he's outside of my top 10. So in a regular standard league, I'm not touching him. In a two-catcher league, he's someone who I wouldn't mind pairing with someone like a Mike Zunino for the power, or someone who I may be higher on, like a Yadier Molina, in terms of the average. there's just different pairings I could go into two catcher league that I would pair him with. So,
yeah, he's my 13th ranked guy. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of like, all right, if I'm in a one catcher 12 team league or one catcher 15 team league, and I decide, all right, screw it, I'm not going to get one of the top few guys. I'm just going to wait until the end and see which one of these five guys is left, and Castillo's one of them, and if I got him, I got him.
Exactly. Well, let's talk a little Brian McCann. What are your guys' thoughts on him? Is he going to be able to have a full season, and do we think he's going to have a similar season to what he had last year? Ray, we'll start with you as an Astros fan.
I would probably expect more of the same from McCann. I mean, maybe they'll work Addison behind the plate a little bit. Maybe Max Stassi if they keep him on the roster since he's out of minor league options. I mean, yeah, McCann, again, he's a solid option. The batting average is a little more of a concern than it is for me with Castillo, but I think the counting stats will be there depending on the playing time, and he's kind of in that same boat. I don't think we're not going to see the 25 to 30 all-star worthy seasons that we saw from McCann when he was on the Braves. At this point, he's aged a little bit. He's kind of just your run-of-the-mill option.
And what about you, Evan? Is he a run-of-the-mill option for you, too?
Yeah, he's very run-of-the-mill. Those were great years in Atlanta for Brian McCann, weren't they? As I was, you know, clicking around before we started the show, I noticed how many of Brian McCann's home runs came in the last, like, 2 weeks of the season. I think it was 4 of his 18 came September 19th or after, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head. So, once again, like the Mike Zunino talk, I think that if the home run total for Brian McCann at the end of the season is 15, even just down from 18, I think, you know, there's a lot more panic built in for McCann. But I still think he's got, you know, a decent shot at the playing time to hit 20, and it's a real good lineup in Houston. But the batting average is going to be kind of a drag. That's never been his forte necessarily.
What are your guys' thoughts on Wilson Ramos? Is he going to be able to come back and be healthy this year? And if so, could he return to that potential top five catcher status?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, at this point, we're in the second season for Ramos off the knee surgery, so I think that's when things will really start to click for him. He hasn't necessarily lost his power. He needs contact is still there, elite contact rate. He just needs to get the ball off the ground a little bit more to take advantage of that power. And I think if all things go right for Ramos, yeah, we could see him in that top five, maybe top 5 to 8 range next year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, they kind of saw the eye surgery, they saw the batting average go up, and they kind of pushed their chips in on Ramos and backing him. And then I think a lot of people will look at what he did last year and they'll try and pin it on the injury and being rusty when he came off. It's weird. You take a look at what he did against right-handed pitching. He hit 240 against him, which was a big step down from the 300 that he hit in 2016, but he still hit 9 home runs against them in 159 plate appearances. He hit 13 and 11 the previous two seasons on 380 plate appearances. So it's interesting as far as, you know, we talk about power output for catchers, but I think the batting average is something that I think a lot of people will bet on the side of the eye surgery and want to put that number a little bit higher than I probably want to. So I think people... I don't think I'm going to get Ramos anywhere. I think I'm going to get outpriced on him.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if I get outpriced on someone like a Wilson Ramos, but I think that he is capable if he's able to put close to those 400 at-bats. You know, he could hit 17 home runs, you know, 70 RBIs, maybe a steal or two, but I think that Ramos is someone who has the potential to return there. I think of all the players that could have a huge upside by this year for where his ADP is going, I think it could be someone like a Wilson Ramos.
Yeah, his ADP is 270, so I'm not necessarily worried about being priced out for Ramos. I mean, especially when you have Jorge Alfaro, who's going, you know, 10 picks before him.
The only reason I wouldn't have someone like Wilson Ramos is if I'm trying to get someone who's healthy, depending on how the status of my team is, just because of the injuries. I'm not sure if I can necessarily bank on any catcher being healthy, but I know that there are quote-unquote safer options at the catcher position, someone like a Wilson Ramos.
But I think you're going to have people that come into a draft, and they may have him pinned for, like, if Wilson Ramos went above Yadier Molina in your draft, would you be insanely shocked?
No. I wouldn't be shocked.
Or, like, maybe Salvador Perez is a little bit higher. If somebody's down on, like, a Gattis or something like that, like, you say at 270 you're not going to get outpriced, and I completely agree. I just think he's probably going to go higher than that. I think he's going to, like, he's going to be taken probably above Wellington Castillo in most leagues, I would think. I mean, obviously the ADP data doesn't say that, but I guess it just doesn't make sense to me. I think he can probably go higher than these guys.
But I think as we get closer to the season, if people see that he's healthy in the spring. So, I mean, that's also one of the advantages of drafting earlier in the offseason, that if we see he's healthy in the spring, he's doing well in the spring, he's hitting in the spring, then, yeah, I think that ADP is going to climb, and he could potentially be one of the biggest climbers at the position.
What about someone like Jonathan Lucroy? Do we expect that he could be someone who could jump up draft boards once he actually signs? And if so, could he potentially come back to that top tier of catchers, or is that kind of something that's gone by the wayside over the last 2 years now?
For me, I don't know how much he's going to climb. He's currently the eighth-ranked catcher, so I think people are assuming he's going to play full as far as ADP. So I think people are assuming he's going to play full-time somewhere, or at least quasi-full-time. Like it's said, to the extent that catchers do, I don't know that he's getting back to anything higher than my third tier at this point, because I mean, he did not look good. He didn't look good last year. I don't think he was. I don't think that's the new normal for Lucroy. I think he's going to do better than he did last year, but it's going to give me a little cause for concern as well.
Yeah, I think once Lucroy signs, you're going to see a slight bump up in the value, and then I think everybody's going to be like, oh yeah, Lucroy's kind of sucked, and it's going to mellow off. He did finish out the season strong in the batting average department, but the home runs just weren't there for him, and it's just a matter of how much you believe he's going to bounce back. If you know, you've been watching his stupid little workout video where he's balancing on the board that's rocking on a barrel and passing the medicine ball back and forth, which I don't understand how that helps him, you know, make contact or hit a home run, but it looks cool on Instagram, I guess.
Got to strengthen that core.
There's zero chance that even if I practice and trained literally just on doing that for 2 months that I would even be able to remotely do that with like two passes. But anyways, yeah, I don't think he's going to be getting back to hitting 24 home runs anytime soon or a 300 batting average anytime soon.
For me, someone like Lucroy could bounce back, but A, I would want to know where he's going, and I would want to know kind of what brought upon such a bad season last year, and once he moved over to Texas, what kind of propelled him going downward? There hasn't been a lot in his game that makes me think that he can necessarily bounce back, but at the same point in time, I don't think he's done. I think he just needs to be in an environment where he's not overly burdened. And I was kind of surprised that when he went over to Texas that the team around him was a pretty good lineup, that he felt so burdened that he actually played worse, or if it was the different environment and not being in Milwaukee. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but maybe if Milwaukee signs him again, he'll actually be good. So
it's possible, and their lineups obviously improved this past week too.
Exactly. All right, guys, why don't you each take a player out of the fifth tier and tell me who you think could bring a top 10 value to the catcher position this year. We'll start with you, Evan.
I don't have the tiers pulled up, so I'm going to go ahead and say Tyler Flowers, who I think we're all pretty high on. His batting average has gotten a lot better since he came on over to the Braves, and I was doing some look. I mean, he wasn't even a fantastic hitter, even when he was like, you think about how the Chicago ballpark, you know, is supposed to help everybody out, and I think he hit like 235 at Comiskey Cellular Field, whatever you want to call it, Ben. But I think there's probably a little more pop in his bat, and I don't necessarily think that the Kurt Suzuki leech of playing time, you know, the 19 home runs or whatever, is going to really continue. So I think with a little more playing time and a little more, you know, a few more at bats, I think the power total could climb up to that, you know, high teens area.
All right, for me, it is Chris Iannetta. Last year, he hit 17 homers and 272 at-bats with the Diamondbacks. Yes, I know he is 35 years old, and he's always had the power. He hasn't really had much consistent playing time. He signed with Colorado this year, so right away, Coors Field, you're getting that Coors Field bump. We saw what it did to Mark Reynolds. Obviously, catching is different than playing first base, but still, if he hit 17 home runs last year, drove in 43 runs in a short, you know, short playing time, the power is real for Iannetta. We know he has power. He backed it up last year. Again, he had a 22% home run to fly ball rate. That I don't think we can expect to see continue. But Chase Field, Coors Field, he's actually moving up in park status. Maybe even say it goes down to 15%. But he adds another 100 at-bats. It's a possibility we see 25 homers from Iannetta. And the RBI could be there since he's going to be in an overall solid lineup. Batting average isn't great. We'll be happy if he hit 254 last year. We'll be happy if he honestly hits 240 or 245 this year. But if we're talking about Zunino in the top 10, Iannetta with 500 at-bats could get pretty close to that.
And for me, my thought is that someone like Yosemite Grandal may be able to still have pretty good value last year. I mean, he wasn't a bad catcher overall. He still gets on base. He has pop. Obviously, there's that playing time issue where you're not sure who's going to get the playing time at catcher between him and Austin Barnes. But I guess we could obviously see Austin Barnes play at a different position if someone like a Logan Forsythe or a Justin Turner get hurt and they move Forsythe over. There's a lot of different options of what they could do. So I think that someone like Yosemite Grandal could bring you decent value, especially even if he gets 350 at-bats, he's still probably hitting you 15 home runs.
Yeah, he's a guy, like I mentioned before, you just want to make sure you curate the batting average by sitting him against lefties.
Yeah, I think you have to.
One last question for you guys. What are your thoughts on Francisco Mejia? Do you think that he's going to come up and be a catcher for a majority of the year? And if so, do you think that he could be a good sleeper for deep league fantasy owners?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ray.
No, go for it, dude.
I just think that there's definitely I think there's definitely the avenue for him to come up, but I just don't know what you think necessarily, like, the upside is, or what you think the opportunity for playing time is. Like, realistically, how many plate appearances do you think he could get?
Well, I mean, it depends, because I think they like Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez behind the plate. Neither have much in the way of fantasy value, so we don't necessarily like them, but I think they like them to a point. It depends what they think of Mejia at third base. They were trying to get him some playing time there last year in the minors. They signed Yonder Alonso, and they have Encarnacion, so first base DH is kind of spoken for. I mean, ultimately, we know Mejia can hit. He had the hitting streak in the minor leagues. He's hit through the minor leagues. But he's more of an average hitter than a power hitter, I think. And then if he plays third base, then Jose Ramirez moves to second. Kipnis goes to the outfield. So I think there's a lot of moving parts here. So I'm having a hard time giving Mejia anything more than maybe 300 to 350 at-bats. And I think maybe he'll hit 280. He could hit 280, but maybe 10 home runs just because I'm not sold on Mejia's having power.
That seems like a lot of at-bats to me. I don't know.
I mean, I think that's probably the high.
Yeah.
All right.
What are your thoughts, Ben? You asked the question.
I mean, my thoughts are is that someone like Mejia, who's such a highly touted prospect, he could come up, but because of how deep that lineup is around him, they may not give him a ton of at-bats. They may keep his service time down, too. So if he finished the year with 200 at-bats, I'd be right in that ballpark. I think that the average and his hit tool is a pretty good one, and that the power could come along, too. You know, if he got 200 at-bats, I think he could maybe hit 270 with, you know, 8 to 10 home runs. So that's why I think that that is what type of bat he brings to the bigs. Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I can be reached at FWFB on Twitter. You can find me on This Weekly Podcast hanging out with my best buddies. And that's about it.
What about you, Ray?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. And, yep, I'll be here every week talking baseball, and I'll be writing about baseball each week on Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And you can also find my writing on Roto Professor.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. You'll be able to find me twice a week on the Fantasy Basketball Podcast with Eric Mackey. You'll continue to find me once a week on the Kuhn and Friends Podcast with these guys. And I look forward to what everyone gets to read in the draft guide article when that comes out, hopefully later this month. And for the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason, everyone.